Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take the complexity out of the white papers and the dense research notes, really just handing you the crucial insights on a silver platter. Today, we are tearing down the engine of decentralized finance.
That's right. We're finally moving past that, you know, that traditional centralized exchange model, where buyers and sellers submit bids and asks, hoping to find a match on an order book. We're diving into the mathematical core of modern financial infrastructure, the automated market maker, or AMM.
And if you've ever traded tokens on a platform like Uniswap, you've definitely interacted with an AMM. Our mission today is pretty simple: to understand how these systems replace human market makers and centralized exchanges, or DX, using nothing but a simple, almost elegant piece of high school algebra.
It really does sound like magic, but it's just pure math. AMM has democratized the entire market-making process. They allow anyone, literally anyone, to become a permissionless liquidity provider, and they allow 247 trading without a single human intervention.
It's revolutionary, but it begs the central question we have to answer. How can a single constant formula determine the price of millions of dollars worth of assets, replacing the complexity of an entire centralized trading floor?
Well, the foundation is the constant product formula. Let's unpack this fundamental equation.
Let's do it. Let's step into the engine room. The core equation that powers, you know, the most famous versions of these protocols, like Uniswap V2, is $6, C dot Y, C dot Y, it's spare. There's beautiful in its simplicity.
And we need to be crystal clear about what those variables represent. So $6 in dollars are the reserves of the two tokens held within the smart contract, the liquidity pool.
Yeah.
If we have an ETH-USDT pool, $6 is the total ETH, and ETH is the total USDC. And crucially, tail dollar is the constant product. It is the invariant, the thing the system must mathematically maintain after every single trade.
Okay, so tail dollars is the invariant, the thing that cannot change. But the price itself is tail. It's constantly changing. How does this product, a dollar, dictate the market rate?
Well, the price is purely a function of the supply ratio. Polaris is determined dynamically by the ratio of the reserves. PT equals YIing. Think of it as a kind of tug of war. What makes it automated is the mathematical pressure.
Meaning, if I want to buy ETH, which is $6, I must deposit USDC, which is AI.
Exactly. You are removing ETH, so $6 shrinks. To maintain that constant dollars, the USDC reserve must increase proportionally. And when U goes up and $6 goes down, the ratio automatically adjusts to a higher price for the remaining ETH.
It's an instant automatic price correction based purely on supply and demand within that single contract.
Precisely. This mathematical relationship creates a continuous price curve. It's what guarantees liquidity always exists, because the formula ensures that as you try to drain the pool, the price of the last remaining tokens becomes, well, exponentially, almost prohibitively expensive. You can never truly empty the pool entirely as long as dollars is greater than zero.
That conceptual framework is solid, but I think we need to see this math in action. We need a live trade to demonstrate what happens when the formula is forced to adjust, especially around that painful concept known as price impact.
Let's run the numbers. Yeah, this is where the surprise factor really hits home.
Okay, so we're setting up a clean scenario. Imagine a pool starting with 10 ETH and 20,000 USDC. That gives us a constant product, $2,000, of exactly 200,000. Before any trade, the initial price is 20,000 divided by 10, which is 2,000 USDC per ETH, a perfect equilibrium.
Right. Now let's introduce a trader. This trader wants to buy one full ETH.
So they send in their USDC, hoping to receive one ETH. What happens to the reserves?
Well, the ETH reserve, $6, drops from 10 to 9. To maintain D for $200,000, we have to find the new required USDC balance. The new SEC requires $200,000 divided by 9.
And that gives us 22,222.22 USDC required to keep the product constant.
And since the pool started with 20,000 USDC, the trader must deposit 2,222.2 USDC to receive that one ETH.
Whoa, hang on a minute. The starting price was 2,000 USDC per ETH, but the trader actually ended up paying over 2,222 USDC for that single ETH. That is an immediate, what, 11% premium just for executing the trade?
That is price impact, and it's instantaneous. But here's where it gets really interesting, because the market has moved permanently. The trade is executed, and now the pool holds 9 ETH and 22,222.22 USDC. So what's the new price of ETH in this pool?
The new ratio. 22,222.22 divided by 9. That means the new price of ETH is now approximately 2,469 USDC. So not only did the trader pay $2,222 for the unit they bought, but the pool price immediately jumped all the way up to $2,469.
Exactly. The liquidity provider just received a significant benefit from that trade, and the formula instantly adjusted the market price to discourage subsequent buyers from continuing to drain the pool. The bigger the trade relative to the total size of the reserves, the more drastic that price jump will be.
That's a powerful illustration of the formula's self-correcting nature, but we ran that calculation without the incentive structure. Where do trading these fit into this execution flow? Because, I mean, fees are essential for keeping the lights on.
The fees are the lifeblood of the AMM and the reward for liquidity providers. Typically, fees are small, like 0.3% for volatile pairs or maybe 0.05% for stablecoins. And the fee is levied on the input amount before the constant product calculation.
So if I deposit that 2,222 USDC to buy ETH, how does the fee work?
Okay, so if the fee is, say, 0.3%, a small portion of that 2,222 USDC is first earmarked as the fee. Let's call it 6.67 USDC. The remaining 2,215.55 USDC is what goes toward balancing the 6x.y equals k equation. But then that 6.67 USDC fee is immediately added back into the pool reserves on top of the calculated reserves.
So the effective amount of USDC in the pool is actually slightly higher than what was strictly required by the formula.
Precisely. The input fee is deducted, and then that fee amount is immediately added back, meaning the pool reserves after the trade are slightly higher, so it slightly increases Teller. And this mechanism is brilliant because it auto-compounds the earnings for the liquidity provider in these V2 AMMs. The LP share of the pool is now a share of a slightly larger constant product.
That brings us squarely to the heroes of the decentralized market. The liquidity providers, the LPs. They are, for all intents and purposes, passive market makers taking on risk in exchange for a share of these trading fees.
The LP's role is pretty straightforward. They deposit an equal value of both tokens into the pool. So if the price is 2,000 USDC per ETH, they might deposit, say, $1,000 worth of ETH and $1,000 worth of USDC. In return, they receive LP tokens.
And these LP tokens are essentially receipts, right? They prove their ownership share of the total reserves, and they entitle the holder to a proportional share of those accrued fees.
Correct. But becoming an LP isn't as simple as just chasing the highest annual percentage yield, or APY, that's advertised on the platform. You really need to analyze the actual economics of the pool. The two critical metrics LPs have to balance are the volume to TVL ratio and the fee rate.
Okay. TVL, or total value lock, that's just the size of the pool. And volume is how often people are trading through it. Let's look at the sources examples, because this comparison reveals a real hidden nugget of knowledge here. Never judge a pool by its TVL alone.
Let's compare two hypothetical pools that have the exact same efficiency ratio.
Okay, so pool one is a blue chip pair, ETHIS-DC. It has a high TVL of $10 million, $2 million in daily trading volume, but a low fee rate of 0.05%. Pool three, on the other hand, is a volatile, maybe riskier pair. Let's call it MIMI USDC. It has a much smaller TVL of $500,000, $100,000 in daily volume, but a high fee rate of 1%.
Now, if we calculate the volume TVL ratio, they are identical. $2 MOS over $10 is 20% for pool 1, and 100K over 500Ks is also 20% for pool 3. So on the surface, their efficiency appears the same.
But the profit potential for an individual LP is completely different. It's all because of the size and the fee structure.
Absolutely. If you invest, say, $5,000 in the massive pool 1, your share is only 0.05% of the total pool. But invest that same $5,000 into the smaller pool 3, and you now own a massive 1% share of the total liquidity.
And when you multiply that 1% share by the much higher 1% fee rate collected on every single trade, the high fee, smaller pool often translates to significantly higher fee earnings, assuming, of course, that $100,000 volume holds up.
That is the crucial lesson for you, the listener. The high fee rate in the smaller pool is the incentive to take on the higher risk of holding a highly volatile asset like a meme token. You're earning potentially greater yield per dollar, but your underlying assets are far, far riskier. That's the calculation LPs must make.
Speaking of large sums, we need to talk about pool depth. If I'm a large institutional trader, a whale depth is the only thing standing between me and massive slippage.
That's right. Depth determines how much you can trade before you cause significant price impact. The deeper the pool, the better it can absorb large trades.
The sources mentioned that mathematically, depth, or dollars, is proportional to the square root of Kaler, whereas a score to a good score. Why the square root, conceptually?
Well, it's because the price curve is hyperbolic. It's not a straight line. When you start with a larger dollar, the reserves are simply larger. A trade of a fixed size only moves the curve a small relative distance. If you have a pool with a K of $80 million versus one with a K of $5 million, The 80 million pool is just much, much harder to push off its current price ratio. A bigger dollar is direct resistance against slippage.
And just for clarity, slippage is simply the difference between the expected price you saw on the screen and the actual price you received after accounting for fees and that immediate price impact we calculated earlier.
Now, this analysis works perfectly for the constant product AMMs, but we have to address their critical defining flaw, which really led to the entire next generation of DXs, and that flaw is capital inefficiency.
Walk us through that inefficiency. Why does 60.Y at LifeK waste so much money?
It's all about how the formula spreads liquidity. Take the most reliable pair, stablecoins like USDC, USDT, which are designed to trade almost exactly at $1 allers. The constant product curve, however, spreads the liquidity across every theoretical price point, from a penny all the way up to $100.
Which means the vast majority of the money LPs deposited is just sitting there, completely idle in ranges that are never, ever used.
Precisely. The research shows that 99.9% of the capital in these traditional V2 pools sits idle, earning no fees, because trades only ever occur in a narrow band right around $1. This inefficiency is expensive, and it means LPs have to spread their capital so thinly that they only earn minimal fees. This flaw became the central problem that later protocols had to solve.
And this inherent capital inefficiency is part of the reason why LPs have to tread so carefully. That brings us to the crucial warning phase. We mentioned earlier that high calculated APYs, you know, rates like 273%, can be massively misleading.
Oh, they absolutely are. That APY calculation often only accounts for the trading fees earned, completely ignoring the primary risks that can wipe out all those gains and then some.
What are the, say, three non-negotiable risks every single LP must factor into their profitability assessment?
Number one, and the most severe, is impermanent loss, or IL. It's the risk that if the prices of the two tokens in the pool diverge significantly, if one skyrockets and the other crashes, or even if both just move far away from their initial ratio, you would have been better off just holding the tokens in your wallet.
So it's not necessarily a loss until you withdraw the funds, but it is the measurable opportunity cost of providing liquidity compared to simply holding the assets.
It's the constant risk of withdrawing fewer units of the highly appreciating asset and more units of the less appreciating asset. Then you have the operational and systemic risks, smart contract bugs, which are always a threat in experimental code, and the risk of one of your tokens, particularly stablecoins, losing its peg or depegging.
So the high-fee pools, like our mini USDC example, offer higher reward, but they compound the risk of both impermanent loss and token depegging. It's a classic high-risk, high-reward trade-off where the APY is just the start of a calculation, not the end.
That's the takeaway. You're a market maker now. You have to think like one.
Okay, that brings us to the end of our dive into the constant product AMM. To quickly summarize, we've seen that AMMs replace traditional order books with a continuous, always-on price curve governed by 6 April Y equals K. Prices are set instantly by the ratio of pool reserves, LPs are paid via fees that slightly increase $10, and the depth of the pool, which relates to the square root of K, determines how much slippage occurs on large trades.
And we established the massive vulnerability of this V2 model, capital inefficiency, caused by spreading liquidity across the entire theoretical price curve, meaning 99.9% of the deposited capital is just sitting idle.
Which brings us to our final provocative thought for you to explore next. If we know that capital inefficiency is the killer and liquidity is only active near the current price,
how must a protocol fundamentally redesign the one-octagon Y-Dogel curve to force capital to concentrate only in the relevant price ranges? And critically, what new extreme risks might that concentration introduce for the liquidity providers who choose to participate in those hyper-efficient next-generation AMMs?
That is the path to concentrated liquidity, and it's the next evolution you need to understand. Thank you for diving deep with us.